The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
I'm Mo Rocca, and I've got a brand new podcast. It's all about the people who have long fascinated me. The one thing they've got in common? They're all dead. The name of my brand new podcast? Mobituaries. From the 20th century's greatest entertainer.
He was everything. I mean, he could play any instrument. He could dance like a maniac.
To the founding father, who just doesn't seem to get much respect.
This guy did everything wrong. So there's no statue, there's no signature on the Declaration of Independence.
You'll learn new things about people you thought you knew.
Were you aware that the day of your inauguration, Audrey Hepburn died?
No.
You'll learn about people who aren't real.
They did not have room in the writing for the older brother because the Fonz became the older brother.
So join me this premiere season of Mobituaries.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
A new national emergency.
We want to stop drugs from coming into our country.
And new developments in the Russia probe.
I was very concerned that I was able to put the Russia case on absolutely solid ground.
And now, from the Capital One Bank studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with the U.S.-Mexico border. President Trump announced a national emergency on Friday from the White House Rose Garden.
What we really want to do is simple. It's not like it's complicated. It's very simple. We want to stop drugs from coming into our country.
White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy joins us now. Stephen, getting those billions of dollars to build a southern border wall with a national emergency may not be so simple.
Well, it might not be so simple, and the president acknowledges the fact that he will face legal challenges. He sort of made light of that at his Friday news conference in the Rose Garden, saying he expects that to be sued, particularly in the jurisdiction of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the Western U.S. He said he's likely to see one bad ruling at the trial court level, then another bad ruling at the appellate level, and then ultimately he hopes, he says, he'll get a fair shake at the Supreme Court. But the White House is taking great pains to argue that the president is using authority in existing law. Perhaps his opponents didn't know that the president had this power, but administration lawyers have been looking at this for many months, and they say that they've carefully devised a way that the president can use unspent money, particularly from the Pentagon, to build the wall.
What's the political reaction, though, of that?
Well, Democrats are saying that they're very concerned about the precedent that this sets. Some Republicans are saying the same thing. And that's where it'll be interesting to watch what happens in Congress, because in addition to the challenge in the courts, you have a possible challenge on Capitol Hill, where the Democratic chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler of New York, is talking about passing a resolution that would challenge the national emergency the president has declared and attempt to terminate it. Importantly, Thursday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he supported the president's decision, even though privately top Republicans in Washington have expressed their wariness of a president issuing a national emergency declaration to achieve a particular policy objective that the Congress specifically wouldn't authorize or appropriate funds for.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy at the White House. Thanks, Stephen.
You bet.
A growing response to former acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe's interview with 60 Minutes.
Andrew McCabe became acting director of the FBI during the tumultuous days of May 2017. In an interview with Scott Pelley for 60 Minutes, he described a meeting in the Oval Office just hours after President Trump had fired FBI Director James Comey.
I was speaking to the man who had just run for the presidency and won the election for the presidency, and who might have done so with the aid of the government of Russia.
How long was it after that that you decided to start the obstruction of justice and counterintelligence investigations involving the president?
I think the next day I met with the team investigating the Russia cases.
The White House dismissed that investigation as baseless, and President Trump responded to McCabe's comments, describing him as a puppet of James Comey. The president tweeted, "Disgraced Andrew McCabe pretends to be a poor little angel, when in fact he was a big part of the crooked Hillary scandal and the Russia hoax." McCabe was fired last March and has written a book about the FBI and his career. He tells Scott Pelley he was worried what would happen to the Russia investigation if he was let go.
"I was very concerned that I was able to put the Russia case on absolutely solid ground in an indelible fashion, that were I removed quickly or reassigned or fired, that the case could not be closed or vanish in the night without a trace."
McCabe also confirms that the deputy attorney general considered wearing a wire in meetings with the president. The Justice Department says no recordings were ever authorized. Nicole Killian, CBS News, The White House.
A federal judge has sided with special counsel Robert Mueller's team, finding former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort breached a plea deal.
Last year, the special counsel's office accused Manafort of repeatedly lying to them about matters at the heart of their investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 campaigns. Manafort denied these allegations. But after a series of secret, behind-closed-door hearings, Judge Amy Berman Jackson found that Manafort intentionally lied about three of the five subjects alleged by prosecutors. This includes his contacts with an associate known to have ties to Russian intelligence services during the campaign and after President Trump was elected. Now, Manafort is 69 years old. As part of his plea deal, he faced up to 10 years in prison, in addition to a sentence for bank and tax fraud convictions. But by breaching his plea deal, he could now face life in prison. Pretty much his only option for avoiding that fate is a presidential pardon, something President Trump has previously said he has not taken off the table for Manafort. Paula Reed, CBS News, The White House.
New scrutiny of the condition of homes in which many military families live across the country.
"I'm infuriated by what I'm hearing. Senators were outraged to hear the testimony about conditions in some of the 200,000 homes on military bases that are managed by private contractors." Marine spouse Crystal Cornwall spoke of issues she had at Camp Pendleton and other families experienced at Camp Lejeune.
"I have felt the helplessness of a fellow Marine Corps spouse as she held her new baby and sobbed while we stood under a collapsing, moldy ceiling in her home at Camp Lejeune."
Cornwall helped organize a Facebook group that now has nearly 2,000 members who have shared their horror stories.
"Those are termites."
Airman Josh Sandin and his wife Lacey have lived in this house at Fort Meade in Maryland for over 2 years.
"We started noticing issues from almost the very beginning."
Appliances started breaking. Siding on their 8-year-old house was warped.
"You can see all along this wall."
And they suspected mold growing on the floor and walls was affecting their children's health. The Sandin's rent is covered by the Air Force, which pays a basic housing allowance of nearly $2,200 a month directly to contractor Corvius Military Living. The company's CEO was one of several housing company executives grilled by senators.
"We let down some of our residents. I am sorry, and we are going to fix it."
Shannon Razadin, a Navy wife, collected complaints from more than 7,000 tenants across the nation through her group, the Military Family Advisory Network.
"They shared stories of black mold, of lead paint, of rats, roaches, bats."
She said many service members don't have any recourse.
"They don't have the opportunity to withhold a rent check. They don't have the luxury of going to look at housing before they move."
Now, back in 2016, the Defense Department's own Inspector General cited pervasive health and safety hazards at military housing facilities. Defense Department spokeswoman tells CBS News they are now reviewing those conditions and their procedures. Jan Crawford, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Coming up, what's next for El Chapo? That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
An unprecedented group of international lawmakers is investigating fake news. And as we hear from CBS's Jim Taylor, it's set to demand a public meeting with an extraordinary collection of high-tech leaders.
Known as the International Grand Committee, consisting of members of legislative bodies from around the world, it holds its second high-profile meeting on disinformation, fake news, and election meddling in Ottawa in May. It will formally invite Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, and Apple CEO Tim Cook, along with a slew of others. Zuckerberg repeatedly declined invites to the committee's first hearing in November. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
A heartbreak for supporters of Amazon's plans to build a sprawling campus in Queens, New York, a victory for opponents.
It was the Valentine's Day breakup that kicked off celebrations at the site of what would have been Amazon's new headquarters in Long Island City, Queens. New York Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
I think it's incredible. I mean, it shows that everyday Americans still have the power to organize.
In a statement, Amazon said a number of state and local politicians have made it clear that they oppose our presence and will not work with us to build the type of relationships that are required to go forward. New York City was among 20 top city contenders to house a second Amazon headquarters. Amazon promised a $2.5 billion investment and 25,000 jobs. In return, New York offered $3 billion in state and city incentives. There were lots of protests and debates over the benefits of large tax subsidies for one of the world's largest companies and the rising cost of housing in New York City. Polls showed a majority of New Yorkers supported Amazon's move to the state. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who helped to lure Amazon, condemned those who trashed the deal, saying a small group of politicians put their own narrow political interests above their community. Ernie Brooks has lived in Long Island City for the last 40 years. His house would have been less than 100 yards from the new headquarters.
It's symbolic of one thing that's really wrong with this country today, which is the dominance of large corporations that don't pay tax, that don't really support the community.
Frank Raphael represents the other side.
This could have been a legendary event for Queens, and unfortunately, I think New Yorkers sort of messed it up.
David Begno, CBS News, along the East River in New York City.
Notorious drug kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman is expected to be sentenced in June after he was convicted for drug trafficking Tuesday. Here's correspondent Jerika Duncan in New York.
This conviction is a victory for the American people who has suffered so long and so much while Guzman made billions.
For federal prosecutors, it was a sweeping victory. Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, guilty on all counts and now facing life without parole.
It is a sentence from which there is no escape and no return.
El Chapo will likely be sent to the Supermax prison in Colorado, one of the homes to the nation's most dangerous inmates, including Boston Marathon bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev and the 1993 World Trade Center bomber Ramzi Youssef. El Chapo's former associates testified how he ordered the torture and murder of rivals and defectors, sometimes carrying out the violent deeds himself. El Chapo, who famously escaped from Mexican prisons twice, once evaded capture by running naked through a sewer, according to his mistress. He hid narcotics inside planes, submarines, even cans of jalapeno peppers, a sophisticated multi-billion-dollar operation that spanned decades. CBS News legal analyst Ricky Kleeman.
What we learned in this trial is how an international drug trafficking empire works. It is run like a Fortune 100 corporation.
Facing a mountain of evidence, the defense called just one witness and rested its case after about 30 minutes. El Chapo did not take the stand. After the guilty verdict was read, he flashed a thumbs-up sign to his teary-eyed wife. Defense attorney Jeffrey Lichtman.
This was not a case where we had a defendant presumed innocent. He was presumed guilty.
The Sinaloa drug cartel that he once led continues to make billions from drug trafficking. It is considered one of the most powerful criminal organizations in Mexico. Jerika Duncan, CBS News, New York.
New questions for singer R. Kelly.
Chicago prosecutors now have a VHS tape that purports to show singer R. Kelly having sexual relations with a 14-year-old girl. Attorney Michael Avenatti turned it in.
It will lead to his arrest and his conviction and incarceration. This is a bombshell of epic proportions.
Avenatti says the person who gave him the tape knows Kelly and the girl. Kelly has repeatedly denied allegations of sexual misconduct. He was acquitted 11 years ago on child pornography charges. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Empire actor Jussie Smollett is speaking out about the attack he says he endured in Chicago last January.
Jussie Smollett told anchor Robin Roberts he's angry. Some people don't believe he was attacked by two masked men yelling homophobic and racial slurs last month in Chicago. The interview aired on ABC's Good Morning America.
If I had said it was a Muslim or a Mexican or someone black, I feel like the doubters would have supported me a lot much more, a lot more.
Chicago police have not found surveillance footage of the attack. Smollett says he spotted a camera when he was showing police where he was targeted.
And I looked up and I saw that there was a camera directly on the light post that is in the intersection. So I'm like, there it is.
But police told him the camera was facing in the opposite direction. The openly gay actor says incorrect information was reported, including that an attacker was wearing a Make America Great Again hat from President Trump's campaign.
They called me a They called me a There's no which way you cut it. I don't need some MAGA hat as the cherry on top of some racist sundae.
Chicago police say they're investigating the case as a hate crime. Wendy Gillette, CBS News.
Chicago police have interviewed two persons of interest in that case. A Colorado jogger is speaking out about his near-death experience with a mountain lion.
I remember looking down and seeing the claws.
Travis Kaufman says he was alone on a midday run along the trails of Horsetooth Mountain Park when he heard a noise.
I turned around and just was pretty bummed out to see a mountain lion chasing after me. It grabbed onto my hand and wrist, and from there it started to claw at my face and neck.
Kaufman, who is 5'10 and about 155 pounds, says his fear became a primal struggle to survive.
I stepped on its neck with my right foot, finally stopped moving, and then jaws opened, and I was able to kind of scramble back up the hill and get the heck out of Dodge.
Parks and wildlife officials have captured two more juvenile mountain lions they believe are the siblings of the one that was involved in that attack on February 4th. Mireya Villarreal, CBS News, Fort Collins, Colorado.
Up next, the American accused of handing over classified intelligence to Iran.
She appears to have switched her allegiance.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up.
CBS News Special Report.
It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News with Jeff Glor.
We're going to begin with our interview with the president late this afternoon.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today. From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan says the U.S. will not pull out of Afghanistan on its own. Shanahan met with NATO allies in Brussels to hash out an exit strategy as the coalition tries to broker peace with the Taliban. More from CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick in Belgium.
Shanahan has been talking to allies concerned about a U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan and what that will mean for their troops. But Shanahan said there will be no unilateral troop reduction. And on the peace talks with the Taliban, he said this may be our moment for peace. The U.S. military and U.S. allies are trying to plan for both the success of the peace talks and the possibility they fail.
Huge groups of civilians are fleeing the last ISIS-held village in eastern Syria as the U.S.-led fight against the terror group intensifies. CBS News correspondent Charlie Daggett is on the front lines there.
They've been pouring out of the last ISIS-held village in numbers no one here had expected. The women and children, sons and daughters of ISIS members who are long gone, still fighting or already dead. Hala Muhammad's husband was killed in an airstrike, leaving her to care for five children on her own.
What does it mean to you to see the end of ISIS?
What is she?
They mean nothing to me. They're trash.
They may have stayed with ISIS until the very end, but the families here say it wasn't out of choice. They were forced to become human shields. But the more families that come flooding out of that village, the easier it is for U.S.-led ground troops to move in. There are estimated to be around 500 to 600 ISIS fighters left. And top SDF official Reader Hillel says there is no escape.
At some point, when it becomes unwinnable for ISIS, are you expecting that they may surrender, or are you predicting a fight to the death?
We know that most of the fighters inside are the toughest left, and they may be looking for an escape route. But the only option is to surrender or die.
Families here told us there aren't many civilians left. The latest to flee from ISIS may be among the last.
Now, the roughly 2,000 American forces here have been a vital part of this fight. Kurdish-led soldiers here won't allow us to film them, but we've seen them everywhere, from frontline fighting to screening ISIS suspects caught trying to sneak out with those civilians. Charlie Daggett of CBS News in eastern Syria.
Burning American flags and chants of death to America marked the 40th anniversary of the Iranian Revolution on Monday.
It's part of a ritual salute to a revolution that four decades on still has true believers. On stage, President Hassan Rouhani spoke about the revolution's achievements and boasted that Iran would continue to expand its military power. That could provoke even harsher American sanctions.
The Trump administration says that U.S. sanctions are going to weaken the Iranian regime. Well, so far, the regime looks just fine, but the Iranian people are having a very rough time.
Amir came to the parade for the free food.
My family is poor myself. Nobody has anything on their table, on their cloth table.
Mr. Trump and the administration say they are trying to target the Iranian regime.
He and millions more are furious with the U.S., but they're equally furious with their own government.
Financial corruption is everywhere, economic corruption. There are lots of thieves among them who just steal millions of dollars.
Underlying all this anniversary hoopla is fatigue and the growing despair of people who can no longer see a way out. Elizabeth Palmer, CBS News, Tehran.
Meanwhile, the Justice Department accuses a former Air Force intelligence specialist of defecting to Iran and handing over classified intelligence to the country's Revolutionary Guard. More from Pentagon correspondent David Martin.
For 11 years, Monica Witt used her top secret clearance to spy on Iran, first for the Air Force and then as a government contractor. But she quit in 2010 and later, according to Assistant Attorney General John Demers, told the Iranians all about her secret work.
What we've alleged is that what she provided them was the identity name of a secret intelligence program of the U.S. government, as well as the identities of an intelligence officer.
She first made contact with the Iranians while attending an anti-American conference in Tehran. After Witt returned to the U.S., she started texting with a go-between, a person holding dual U.S.-Iranian citizenship who was assessing her potential as a spy. In one text, Witt told the go-between she might do like Snowden, an apparent reference to Edward Snowden, the one-time contractor for the National Security Agency who leaked troves of top-secret documents. Then she defected to Iran.
She appears to have switched her allegiance to thinking that the United States, where she was born and raised and worked, was not where her allegiance was anymore.
Witt helped the Iranians create so-called target packages on the American intelligence officer who had run the secret program, along with several others she knew.
A target package in intelligence community parlance is basically a plan to neutralize one of our intelligence agents.
Iran attempted to hack into the officers' computers and plant malware that would allow them to record every keystroke on their keyboards.
None of the American intelligence officers the Iranians targeted are known to have been harmed. As for which, she is believed to still be in Iran and beyond the reach of U.S. law. David Martin, CBS News, the Pentagon.
On Thursday, Parkland, Florida marked 1 year since a high school shooting killed 17 people.
I'm Peter King in Parkland. Even with reduced attendance, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School observed a day of service and love. It included a thank you breakfast for the first responders who answered calls for help last year. Freshman Haley Jacobson.
I felt it was really great that they came out
with smiles on their faces, telling everyone it was okay, making everyone feel safe.
Jacobson says a moment of silence followed, the principal trying to be reassuring and comforting.
And after he read off each of the names, you could hear people crying, and it was so upsetting.
A reminder that these are children who had to grow up very quickly. Peter King, CBS News, Parkland, Florida.
Boys from a Catholic school caught up in a viral video controversy have been cleared of wrongdoing by the Covington, Kentucky diocese.
Catholic diocese leaders in Covington, Kentucky say an outside investigation has found that students from an all-boys Catholic high school did not instigate a confrontation at the Lincoln Memorial that went viral on social media. The students were in Washington, D.C. for an anti-abortion rally last month, and they got caught up in separate protests involving black street preachers and a group of Native Americans. They were accused of mocking the Native Americans and widely criticized over a video showing a teenage boy with the Make America Great Again hat face-to-face with a Native American man. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, saving endangered alphabets.
This is really, really important.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
You know, it's a lucky. Yeah, we are here.
That's a member of the Cherokee Nation speaking Cherokee in the Wikitongues Project. Cherokee is one of the world's fastest vanishing languages. Now there's renewed efforts to save these dying languages. This year, the United Nations declared 2019 the year of indigenous languages, reporting nearly 2,700 in danger of disappearing. Tim Brooks leads the Endangered Alphabets Project. It's a way to digitally preserve fading languages. Tim joins us from Burlington, Vermont. Tim, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for calling me.
Tim, tell me how the Endangered Alphabets Project actually works to digitally preserve these languages and these alphabets.
So the Endangered Alphabets Project has actually started out by preserving pieces of text in these writing systems by me carving them by hand in wood and exhibiting them. And this sort of started off as a hobby, but people said to me, no. One, this is really, really important. And two, this is art. And I had never really thought of words as images and writing as art until then. So that's one thing that I do. But the most recent thing that I've done is to create this, as you say, this digital thing, this online atlas of endangered alphabets. And there it's as much about capturing and telling the stories of all of these remarkable cultures as it is digitally preserving and giving images of these writing forms, but also giving information about individuals or groups who are working to promote, protect, preserve, even revive these writing systems. Those are really the people I'm trying to help.
How unique are some of these writing styles and alphabets?
There are definitely alphabets that have been created for example, small specific church groups or small indigenous populations. And there may be only a few dozen people still using them. Likewise, there are others that have been used on a vast scale, like the Manchu alphabet, for example, for Manchuria, which maybe is used on a day-to-day basis by only a dozen people, even though at one point it was the official writing system of the imperial Chinese court.
How much does a culture identify with its own writing style?
That's a brilliant question. The answer is far more than you would think. One way of thinking about it is supposing that, for example, in the United States, the government decided, you know what, our major trading partner in the future is going to be China, and therefore we're going to teach the Chinese writing system in school. There would be uproar. Conversely, there have been several instances when somebody has created a writing system for his own culture that didn't have one and has been arrested or killed because the effect of having their own form of writing has been so powerful and so galvanizing and given such a sense of dignity and respect to that people that that person was seen by a larger authority, a different government, as a troublemaker and was arrested or killed. So the depth of feeling that we have towards our own writing systems is really extraordinary.
Tim Brooks leads the Endangered Alphabets Project. You can see his atlas of disappearing languages on endangeredalphabets.net. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks.
A far-flung Russian town is on edge amid what's being called a polar bear emergency.
Dozens of polar bears are making themselves at home, roaming through apartment buildings and around neighborhoods in this remote region in Russia. In one town on a peninsula stretching into the Arctic Ocean, residents have spotted more than 50 bears in the last few weeks. People are posting their movements on social media, while officials have declared a state of emergency for the town of 3,000. The invasion of polar bears has some residents scared to leave their homes or send children to school after a series of attacks. The animals are common in the Arctic region, but never before have so many occupied a residential area. Experts say climate change is forcing the bears inland to look for food. Gwen Baumgartner, CBS News, London.
The CDC says the season's flu vaccine is proving effective. Reporter Sabrina Cupid has details from Atlanta.
This year's vaccine is about 50% effective at protecting you from flu. According to the CDC, it's a little better for children, as the CDC's Josh Doyle explains.
The virus that's circulating this year is the H1N1 virus, and so sometimes we see more flu in children when that's the predominant virus. And so our estimates for H1N1 in children were 62%. We're particularly pleased that it's doing its job in kids.
Flu is widespread over most of the country, and while the vaccine doesn't offer complete protection, it does offer some. Sabrina Cupid for CBS News, Atlanta.
Progress has been made against several common cancers, leading to a narrowing of the death rate between black and white Americans.
I'm Gary Nunn. The gap between the number of African Americans and whites dying of cancer is narrowing. For a few age groups, including men under 50 and women 70 and older, that disparity has disappeared. The American Cancer Society says the decreases in smoking and lung cancer in blacks than in whites is the key reason. In fact, the cancer death rate is down for all Americans, but the rates have dropped faster in blacks than in whites. Still, African Americans have the highest death rate and lowest survival rates of any racial or ethnic group. Gary Nunn, CBS News.
Now to finances. If your tax refund isn't as big as you expected this year or you didn't get one at all, CBS News senior business analyst Jill Schlesinger explains one reason why.
Although two-thirds of taxpayers are likely to pay fewer dollars in taxes this year than the year before, many of them have already gotten those dollars because their paychecks change because of their withholding. They may not have realized it, but those few extra dollars in your pocket every week, that went to your bottom line.
J.P. Morgan does an about-face on cryptocurrencies. CBS News business reporter Jason Brooks explains.
J.P. Morgan has been one of the biggest critics of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, but that's changing. The financial giant is launching its own digital currency, the JPM coin. J.P. Morgan is fairly broad in its description, saying the digital coin could be pegged to the U.S. dollar and used for international payments. The move comes as the cryptocurrency market has been crushed over the past year, with Bitcoin losing 80% of its value since its peak. But the underlying technology of the blockchain is seen as a potential game changer in secured online transactions.
Coming up, a swan song for a Mars rover.
I'll be seeing you
on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
What we want to try to do is give the American people the truth.
Jim Bridenstine, administrator of NASA. How close are we to space tourism?
I think we're very close.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
A musical message to NASA Mars Rover Opportunity in a last-ditch effort to wake it up. More from CBS News correspondent Mark Strassman.
NASA scientists tried to revive the Opportunity rover one last time.
I'll be seeing you.
But not even the sound of Billie Holiday's voice could wake up their most senior Martian explorer. Since touching down in 2004, Opportunity has exceeded the space agency's wildest expectations.
We took everything that we needed, we put it on wheels, and we made a geologist that could go and investigate.
The rover, along with its robot twin, Spirit, found evidence the cold, dusty Martian surface was once warm, wet, and capable of supporting life. Although Spirit met its end in a sand trap in 2010, Opportunity chugged along for another 8 years, logging more than 28 miles, taking almost 220,000 photographs, and setting longevity records. In June, a planet-wide dust storm blocked out the sun and choked the rover's solar panels. Its batteries were draining, and darkness was closing in.
Even though it's a machine, and we're saying goodbye, it's still very hard and very poignant.
Opportunity helped usher in a new generation of Martian explorers. NASA hopes mankind isn't too far behind.
We're going to put humans on Mars, and humans are going to be working side by side with landers and rovers and robots.
After more than 5,000 days on the Martian surface, its final resting spot, fittingly, is a place called Perseverance Valley, where the window for Opportunity finally closed. I'm Mark Strassman.
Now to the bottom of the ocean on Earth. Here's correspondent Mark Phillips.
Rob Kraft, shipwreck hunter. He may have found something.
You know, you just hate to throw it out there on the table.
He's aboard the research vessel Petrel, hundreds of miles from anywhere in the South Pacific, searching for an American war grave that has been lost for 77 years.
Here we go.
His tools, the latest technology, an underwater drone that scans the ocean floor 3.5 miles down.
Enemy planes scored several hits on the Hornet.
The USS Hornet was an aircraft carrier involved in the crucial 1942 battle for Guadalcanal. It would be her last battle. 140 of her crew were killed that day. The rest were ordered to abandon ship before she went down. But where exactly?
This is needle in a haystack country is what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rob and the crew have to guess where to search using the rough positions reported by other ships at the time.
Let's start breaking it in nice and slow.
The drone resurfaces. Its hours of recorded images show mile after mile of empty seabed until...
How about in the top left? What does that look like?
That looks suspiciously like a ship. To find out if it's the ship, they launch another tool, a remote-controlled sub with live cameras.
Narrow V going subsea.
It dives 17,000 feet down through a dark, strange world where a ghost ship emerges.
This is it. This is Hornet.
This is Hornet.
This is Hornet.
Well done.
The actual fact that you can find these ships is mind-boggling to me.
Richard Nowatzky was an 18-year-old gunner on the Hornet that day. He's 95 now. We set up a video link from the ship to California so he could see the Hornet again, even the gun he was on.
Does it seem like a familiar place?
Yes, it does. I used to stand on the right side of that gun. If you go down to my locker, there's $40 in it. You can have it.
Silent guns. The hangar deck. Discarded clothing, a wash kit, testaments to those who had fought and died here.
There were a lot of them, and young guys. You realize that you could be a dead person, you know. I want to thank you for honoring me with this way.
But it is those who found the Hornet who are honored, and a memorial, a lost grave, now has a place. Mark Phillips, CBS News. In the South Pacific.
A popular children's show changing the way American kids speak.
American parents are noticing a strange phenomenon.
Can George and me come too? Please?
Their tiny tots are developing British accents from watching the cartoon Peppa Pig on TV. Moms and dads have been sharing on social media. Their kids are also using signature Peppa phrases like, "Daddy, can you snuggle me?" at tuck-in time. Some mothers say their children are calling them Mummy, oinking, and ending their sentences with snorts, just like Peppa. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
Finally this weekend, correspondent Seth Doan reports from Verona, Italy, on the modern impact of a love story for the ages.
There is something undeniably romantic about the Italian city of Verona, where William Shakespeare set his famed tale Romeo and Juliet. Tourists make a sort of love pilgrimage here to what's celebrated as Juliet Capulet's house. Christina Spagnolo, who usually works in a gelato shop, moonlights as Juliet and collects some of the thousands of letters that pour in annually, seemingly from another era.
We use phone, telephone, Instagram, Facebook, and it's beautiful to see that people write with paper and pen,
Those letters wind up at the Juliet Club, where they're carefully pondered by a rotating cast of volunteers. On this day, three Americans studying abroad in Italy are standing in as Juliet.
Juliet is an icon of love and romance, and you want to make sure that you're really embodying that and really getting into that.
And it looks lovely.
They so answer beautiful. Letters on topics that run the gamut. Falling in love with your friend, falling out of love with your spouse. Giovanna Tommaso is the president of the Juliet Club. She said letters have been coming to Verona since the 1930s, after a Hollywood film was released.
This writer, she said, you know, she was going through a divorce and now she feels like she needs help trusting and connecting with people again.
What do you say to her?
You have to keep putting yourself out there, even though you've been, you know, hurt before.
The number of letters they receive is increasing.
Dear Juliet.
Perhaps in our fast-paced world, there's something to be gained by slowing down and seeking the advice of a simpler time. Seth Doan, CBS News, Verona, Italy.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Jake Rosen is the intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.